I have a quote from your January, what is it, January 6, 2016 private session with Ion. And it says, I got to catch it. I just missed it. Yes, you say, Bob, when we fail, non-physical gets into the act, in the gap. It's required for bridging. I wondered before if artness was more real than isness. It seemed to be that, but you are not saying that artness is. And Iron says, it depends on what side of the fence you are looking at. Remember, the grass is always green on the other side until you get there. Soon you are going to find that there is no difference between isness and artness, but you are not there yet.
Well, that's good. I don't know if I got the beginning part.
Okay. When we, you said, this is what you said, Bob. When we fail, non-physical gets into the act in the gap. It's required for bridging. And then you say, I wondered before if artness was more real than isness. It seemed to be that, but you are not saying that artness is. And then that's why Ion says, it depends on what side of the fence you are looking at. Remember, the grass is always greener on the other side until you get there. Soon you're going to find that there is no difference between isness and artness, but you are not there yet.
See,
so that sounds like both and.
It's something to do with knowing, I think.
Yeah, what'd you say, Bert? It sounds like what?
Both and.
Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
In the long run. Let's go back to Simple McLuhan. He says things. He doesn't cancel it. He does later, but years later. Let's see. What's Malvo and those guys saying? There's Kyle. Kyle's a total fuck-up. He never comes in anymore. He shows up for 5 minutes, makes a comment, and leaves. Look at that. Ion is Noi spelled backwards. Nation of Islam? OG. Original Gods? New Original Information. Well, that's pretty good, says Kyle. Ora. Lynette. Is that the I? Who's Lynette? Is that the original L.A. Ion Slackite subgenie?
Maybe.
Remember that? That's Lynette, isn't it?
Isn't Lloyd?
No, there was the woman down in L.A. who did the gardening. And when she called in, I called her subgenius. And she stopped years ago, called in, but I think it was Lynette. Lynette. I used to say her name wrong.
Loyette? What about Loyette?
No. Yeah, that's someone else. She's who Carolyn says up in Vancouver. That's Loyette. Lynette, we haven't heard from in years. Correct, Lynette? Are we right? Are you down there in L.A.? Look, she always talks about, like, she doesn't need us, doesn't need Ion. She's a god. And she's saying, when exercising the god powers, I found it good just to avoid both. You got to give up pretending you're a god, Lynette. Get in here and be a dummy. You got to be able to do it. Yeah, she says, yeah, it's me. Yay. Well, why don't you call in? You haven't spoken to us in 6 years. Why don't you fucking join in, asshole, and take the shit. Take a good beating. You're all wrong. You missed everything.
Come on, Lynette. Get in here.
Unless you have heard every show. I don't know. Come on, Lynette. Nobody will know. And Ora sent me an email today. You know, Ora hasn't been around a while. So he sends an email. It's all here. So I click on it, and it's someplace called mysteriousuniverse.org, and it features Bob Berman and a bunch of podcasts. And author and astronomer Bob Berman joins us this week to discuss how biocentrism views life and consciousness as the keys to understanding the universe. Okay, wrong. You can't say words are defining what's happening. That's Ion owns that. And Ion doesn't stick with his definition, so this is too slow. We look at Berman's most recent co-authored book on the biocentric theory of everything. He shares his own ecstatic experience. We try and wrap our heads around the claim that there's no independent external universe outside of biological existence. Well, that's fucking bullshit. Any of these words requires much definition and multiple level meanings. What's biological existence? Blah, blah. So I wrote back to him, and I said, I just went, what's all there? I sort of looked at it, and I said, well, what's all, you say it's all there, what's all there? Don't forget, Lynette, to call in. Let's check, see if she called in. Web control. New message? No, nobody's calling in. So he writes back when I say, what's all there? He says, a bunch of shit, visual versus acoustic, being, doing, acting as being part of the environment versus a dialectic self and environment, time anomalies in different states, shifting ground, and how it relates to measurement and quantum physics and some other stuff. Okay, I can take his words there and say, yes, that's correct. But that's not the fucking point. You must come in here and engage with IOM. Bring this Berman guy in here and see if he can surf like I can. I can surf the 40-foot ionic wave. Can you? Because your terms and descriptions aren't going to last long. Whatever he says about shifting around. You know, okay, so he says visual acoustic. Maybe he has some McLuhan stuff. Doesn't matter. Like Lynette, you're a failure until you come in here and kibbutz with us. Kibbutz.
Kibbutz.
Yeah, kibbutz, yeah. Okay, so somnambulist sleepwalking is a great escape, great talk by McLuhan. Let's go to the next one. As McLuhan said in a play written about him in 1994, we saw it in New York City by Ann somebody. That was the playwright. McLuhan, the character, goes, quoting something he said years ago, you don't like those ideas? We got a lot more. Or, you don't like those ideas? I've got a lot more. So we got a bunch of other. We got a lot more, McLuhan, if you didn't like that. So we have to find out what it is. So look at Lynette says. She's answering. She says, I pretty rarely listen. Just thought to tune in some tonight. Well, fucking join us. You don't think you're a god. You're not a fucking god. You're thinking the old terms. You're not a god unless you engage payday and whatever's here. That's the fact, Lynette. You're fucking hiding. Won't work. You must engage. Obey. And we don't mean it. I'm not going to do anything to you. Just come in here and say your bit, and then we respond, and then we'll say something you didn't expect, and then you can respond to that, and then we'll say something that you did expect, and you might respond to that. See, you picked the right day to tune in, Lynette. We're operating on a whole new level now with this new McLuhan archive. Okay?
Yep.
So stop.
It's your arnis, Lynette.
What?
It's her arnis.
Yeah. You're just an isness. We want some arnis. you're an arnis on the chat line. We need arnis in the phone system. Aura. That's what meta's for. Okay, so you like the word. Doesn't matter, aura. Our words are faster. Our words are pre-words, post-words, all those things that only I can do. That's what you're here to experience.
And Kyle, Bob, Kyle's got the southern accent, right? He's the
Elvis guy. He failed at his Elvis impersonation. He had the opportunity and he didn't do it. Something like that. Remember that, Bert?
Yeah.
Yes. He also gave us a description of his girlfriend.
Oh yeah, he's a good sex. He's a good sex activist. He fucks a lot, or used to fuck.
He likes to talk sex.
His black girlfriend.
That's right.
Talk about his levels of transcendence he got. Oh, here's a blocked. Is that me? Who? No, that must be me. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I got the red thing. I'm making noise, plus I got an arrow under host. So, where's Sean? Where's Brian? Looks like they're gone. Well, Brian, you know, gets into 2 in the morning. Guess they have a reason to go. So I'm going to go get another McLuhan part. Okay. What do you think of the McLuhan so far, Bert?
These are rare articles, Bob. Did someone just send those to you during the break?
Yep.
Or you were... Wow.
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of stuff dumped on me.
Wow.
Yeah. They said, Bob, the regular McLuhanites, they don't let you into their scene, but I know you're the greatest McLuhan scholar. I thought I'd give you some new stuff to work with. So he wants to hear me talk about it, he or she. They're giving it so that they like my advanced analysis of it. They're not going to get anybody else to talk about it. I make it valuable.
Yes. And it goes to show you how you can you found some new information. I mean, that whole thing of being sleepwalking, being asleep is totally new. And there are no answers, in electrical environment. That's
endless processing.
Yes.
And the more sense you are, you can drop off. You don't need it. You know it's never going to end. Just like your mortar's never going to end, just like your physical being, your essence is never going to end.
Yes, there's many levels in sleepwalking.
What?
This is a new level of sleepwalking here.
There's
many levels of it.
Yeah.
So remember that quote that we talked a lot while ago when we were listening to the tapes, brought it up, that McLuhan said that one of the jobs in the future, one of the things people do in the future is knowing. Was it something like knowing?
McLuhan said, our job in the future will just be knowing. That means tuned in. It's what everybody does today to find out what's on Drudge.
Right, right.
Knowing what the collective pattern is.
But not knowing answers, not looking for answers, but just knowing the flow of the Android meme or what's going on, what we do with you. So it's not really like you have an answer, you know. Right.
Yeah, I would say just keep awareness. This is going. You are aware of what you experience, what a lot of people are experiencing through this simultaneous media. So that seems to be what awareness is. May not be. I might change it. But yes,
the way we talk about Trump is an example. The knowing, our knowing of Trump, of how we talk about Trump differently than anyone else.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I've got here.
Oh, shuffle the cards, Bob.
Yeah. Let's see. You know, a while before Roxanna left, she sent an email and says, thanks. Let's see. She says, I have to start getting ready to go. Thanks again. Ready for capital M. And then a separate word, O-R-E. So she's spelling more as M-M space O-R-E. Ready for McLuhan Gold. Or can be minerals. So nice pun there. Ready for M-M ore. Or ready for more McLuhan. Okay.
Nice.
Mining. So what?
Mining McLuhan.
Mining, right. Right, that's right. Mining. Doesn't have to be gold. Yeah, minerals, but it's mining. So the next item is another one with no date. And it's sometimes you can tell by the content when the date is. Maybe when we read this. Okay, so this is called Flapping Fish by McLuhan. And it says, Marshall McLuhan is a hippie wandering alone among the squares of academe. Speaking last night at the second seminar on Irish studies at Brennan Hall in St. Michael's College, that's his Catholic college, he left the audience in the usual confusion as to what it was he actually said. Before he began, those present stroked each other, Eric Byrne style. Didn't Eric Byrne do I'm okay, you're okay? Transactional analysis?
Yeah.
Okay. I got to see who's – don't rub your stuff. I don't make noise. Okay. So Sarah seems to be still here. So before he began, those present stroked each other, Eric Byrne style, with all the preciosity academics at an academic conference can muster. So they're all schmoozing, would be the new term. But McLuhan broke the rules. He didn't talk their language. He talked his own, challenging his listeners to involve themselves in what he's saying. That's what we do. We challenge people to engage in ION. Instead of speaking on modern nationalism as listed on, in the program, he talked in tribal circles, thus avoiding being defined by his topic, as any conscientious hippie would. So let's just see if Lynette's anybody. Lynette says, Bob, going and being stealth is good too. No. Yeah, of course it's good. But being one or two things is not enough. You got to be it all. Like, we're stealth, but we don't appear to be stealth. See? Got to contradict yourself. Fuck being stealth. That's too long. So, Lynette, call in. I know you're inadequate, can't speak. I'd throw you within 2 minutes, and you'd end up laughing and capitulating. But it doesn't matter. We're here to encourage you to stay strong in the voice as you engage in mortar. Okay, so the next paragraph. McLuhan pioneered in the teaching of James Joyce, that's true, at St. Michael's College years ago, and like a preacher referred to Joyce as the scripture for his lesson. Then there's a quote. The rise of nationalism is inseparable from the rise of industry and commerce. Pre-commercial, pre-literate societies have no means of knowing what nationalism is. The sixth thunder begins with the cash register. Now, McLuhan hardly ever discussed the thunders in Finnegan's Wake. That was Eric's book. So that he said, he mentioned, just identified one of the thunders is makes his talk unique. The only other time he talks about the wake is in that Australian 1977 YouTube that's quite popular. McLuhan, you know, he's sitting there with the Australian audience in 77 and talking a lot of different neat stuff. He mentions Finney's Wake in a way he never did in public. So this is the second instant. Then Joyce's Phoenix Theater, which is a character of environment in Finney's Wake. So Joyce's Phoenix, and it's spelled F-E-E-N-I-C-H-T-S, or maybe D-S, I don't know which is the correct spelling. Joyce's Phoenix Theater in Finnegan's Wake, McLuhan said, is the history of the Abbey Theater in Dublin. That was the Celtic Revival Theater, I guess you'd say, Irish culture. I think Yeats very involved in that. And James Joyce was interested in it as a commercial theater where exhibitionism was paid for as it is in modern industrial society. So Joyce wanted to make some money out of it, according to this journalist. So then they quote McLuhan. Russia is still trying to have a 19th century, and China hasn't even got one yet. This struggle to become a national industrial nation we see as a communist threat. When hardware services of a society, the press, transportation, information, exceed the power of the greatest private wealth, we have a communist nation. Marx didn't know his environment. He spent all his time in a library surrounded by books. Karl Marx was walking into the future through a rearview mirror. James Joyce paid great attention to how a material environment altered perception. In the individualist exhibition of a box office commercial theater. Yeah, there are scenes in Finney's Wake where Joyce is at the theater. So he paid great attention. So for him, his medium was theater, and he watched how it affected the audience and altered their perception. In the individualist exhibitionism of a box office commercial theater. Then McLuhan says, that's what the journalist said. Then McLuhan says, wait a minute. That's McLuhan talking. Let's do that again. Marx spent all his time in a library surrounded by books. Marx was walking into the future through a rearview mirror. James Joyce paid great attention to how a material environment altered perception. In the individualist exhibitionism of a box office commercial theater. Okay, that's acceptable. Then McLuhan says, the national society has a corporate identity. It is goal-oriented. It has purpose, vision, drives, and it is on a collision course with any other similar society. A tribal society has no direct... A tribal society, as opposed to a national society, has no direction or purpose. There is no such thing as a direction now. Now, so the new electric tribal society has brought back the directionless tribal society. There's no such thing as a direction now. The goal moves faster than you do. The illusion of purpose is institutionalized in our society. The illusion of purpose. The fin cycle, talking about Finney's wake, the fin cycle wakes up again in the electric age. The return to the lingorous, languorous world of the dark. Lingorous, languorous world of the dark is, I think, a quote from Finnegan's Wake. But he's not saying that. He's just taking the phrase and saying, the return to the lingorous, languorous world of the dark is the return to the archetypal world. Dress is finished. Costume is taking over. Jobs are done. Roles are taking over. So this is probably 1968 because he starts talking about the movie The Graduate, which came out in 68. And could be a delay 69. So this is when this is happening. And he definitely didn't quote Finnegan's Wake in that period. The graduate, Ben, is unable to go back to the suburban world he came from. He's unable to orient himself. He is seduced by his own mother and marries his sister, which is Oedipus turned backwards. Now, in the actual movie, the mother was a neighbor matriarch, and the sister was a daughter, maybe of the matriarch mother. So they weren't literally in the movie, mother and sister of him. He is seduced by his own mother and marries his sister, which is Oedipus turned backwards. This total kinship of all men involved in all men, Oedipus was horrified. So he is seduced by his own mother and marries his sister, which is Oedipus turned backwards. This total kinship of all men involved in all men. Oedipus was horrified by involvement. He wanted total disengagement, literacy in all the world's processes. So he wanted literary disengagement. Plato attacked the poets, the establishment of his time, the Homeric monopoly of the education of the young. The world Plato said must end was mimesis, the irrational. Involvement instead of analysis was the enemy. He wanted total detachment, Plato did. The present time is engaged in reviving Homer and getting rid of Plato. And then the journalist says, and, end of quote, and then says, and so on. Remember the first quote, the very first one we did, involvement was more of a detachment. But here he's using the way we understood involvement later. Involvement instead of analysis, which is detachment, was the enemy. Plato wanted total detachment. So then the journalist says, all McLuhan did was elaborate and ornament his mystical theory. He casts out the net of his mind to catch examples floating in the present air and draws them in like flapping fish to be consumed in his omnivorous worldview. Anything will do, even James Joyce. So then she quotes a gentleman. After McLuhan's talk, one gentleman got up and said, "You're wrong in stating that the Abbey Theater was a commercial theater. In fact, it was the most uncommercial of theater." So someone takes a conventional view of the theater. You know, it's avant-garde, bohemian guys, not making much profit, probably doing radical theater. So it wasn't a commercial theater. So why is McLuhan saying it is? And the local Irishman says, "Nope, it was not what you're saying, McLuhan." So the journalist says, they made McLuhan look like a provisional. They make provincial. Could be, yes. I think I remember reading that. It's got a wrinkle in it, the article. It's hard to see. They made McLuhan look like a provincial con man. The gulf between McLuhan and his audience is a folie à deux, a clash between two opposed ways of thinking. If he isn't crazy, they are. But there's more to them. With his tangle of pithy aphorisms, there's a wrinkle in the paper. With his tangle of pithy aphorisms, leading not to an explanation, but to another riddle, goes from one riddle to another. He squares for a loop. And he's tying the same revered academic references by tying them together in an unpredictable way. But he didn't say much about nationalism. So the topic was nationalism, and he didn't say it. The journalist is a bit pissed off at him. and some of the people who took them literally are angry at him. They have a picture of McLuhan, and it says Marshall McLuhan and a colon, and it says not much nationalism. And it's true. He never put on much nationalism. Are you okay? So anything you want to say about that article?
Well, how could he be defined as a nationalist at all, given the definitions that he just gave?
Right. Yeah, that's right. He's explained to them why nationalism is a non-issue and the conference is a badly named. Now, Bert, when I said anything more to say, you went no? Somebody said no, I thought.
Yeah, I said no. No, because I was what I said no, and then Gene brought it up, is like it didn't seem like it matched what the person said about McLuhan being nationalist.
Yeah.
Didn't match to me.
It didn't, what didn't match?
What the person wrote, and then they're saying that McLuhan was being nationalistic.
Who said that? Who said McLuhan was being nationalistic?
In the article you just read.
Did I? Let's see.
Well, it's like the conclusion, the writer's conclusion, it was like he totally, McLuhan's, what McLuhan said went way past his head. For him to even suggest that McLuhan's not a nationalist, based on the definitions that McLuhan just gave, it's meaningless. It's not the question doesn't apply.
What question?
The last statement you, actually it wasn't a question, it was a statement. He said McLuhan wasn't a nationalist, or something about McLuhan not being a good nationalist.
He didn't say much about nationalism. And the picture has him, his name, Marshall McLuhan, colon, not much nationalism.
Well, he said a lot about nationalism, just not in the context of what the...
Not what the guy was looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the grammar, and he gave the roots of nationalism in the visual space. Gave
so
its etymology.
So he didn't even hear what McLuhan was talking about in reference to that word.
Well, he typed it out, but... He didn't really understand what he printed here, which was the case all the time. See, there was hardware communism in the 19th century. People had press, transportation, information, relative group media for pennies. That's what he liked to say. And then we moved. That was hardware nationalism. Then we moved in the 20th century with software nationalism. Russia is still trying to have a 19th century, and China hasn't even got one yet. This struggle to become a national industrial nation we see as a communist threat. When hardware services of a society, the press, transportation, information, exceed the power of the greatest private wealth, we have a communist nation. There was no private person can buy up the coach house, the press, and transportation, and different things, railways, for themselves. They can't steal it from the society. So
therefore
private wealth is just a fringe thing. What'd you say?
Well, therefore, it's communism.
Everybody's sharing services relatively free.
Right.
And he says Marx didn't understand that, didn't know his environment. He spent all his time in a library, surrounded by books. Marx was walking into the future through a rearview mirror. The library was the rearview mirror. James Joyce paid great attention to how a material environment altered perception in the individualist exhibitionism, of box office commercial theater. The National Society, nationalism, has a corporate identity. It's goal-oriented. Yeah, that's right. He is talking about nationalism. But they want it to be goal-oriented. He must talk about it like with a political complaint or a political celebration. The National Society has a corporate identity. It is goal-oriented. It has purpose, vision, drives. And it is on a collision course with any other similar society. A tribal society has no direction or purpose. There is no such thing as a direction now. The goal moves faster than you do. The illusion of shifts, you can't keep up with the goal, can't see it. the illusion of purpose is institutionalized in our society. It's institutionalized because it's part of Western man's background that we invented. Can't get rid of that meme of private space. The Finn cycle wakes up again to the electric age. The return to the lingering, languorous world of the dark. Dark ages is the return to the archetypal world. Dress is finished. Costume is taking over. Jobs are done. Roles are taking over. So, McLuhan, the word archetype can mean concept or percept. I've seen him flip it and mean two things at different times in the same article. So the archetypal world is returning to the cliche world. It's the return to the archetypal world. That could be just the world itself is archetypal. The dark world, the original primitive world. So then the graduate Ben is unable to go back to the suburban world he came from. Now, he spends time in the suburban world. That's where he has the affair with the neighbor, and he has a girlfriend, and some neighbors tell him that if he wants to get a good job, go into plastics. And he's at a barbecue, I remember that, doing different scenes. So he has been made discarnate, but it's not a place he goes to. He's just living in it, living in the electric world that's spinning past him or sweeping
floating
him along.
Floating in the swimming pool.
Yeah.
I just remember him, floating on the air mattress in the swimming pool.
Yeah, that's actually a scene?
I want to say the movie starts out that way, but yeah, there's just a strong memory of him being that wayward youth. Just floating.
And that's what I said a couple hours ago. I talked about floating discarnate, right?
Yes.
I predicted this image accidentally, by default. He is unable to orient himself, trying to get a visual perspective or a goal. He is seduced by his own mother and marries his sister, which is Oedipus turned backwards. This total kinship of all men involved in all men. Oedipus was horrified by involvement. He wanted total disengagement, literacy in all the world's processes. Yeah, literacy would be a new phenomenon back then, a novelty. He wanted literacy. He wanted total disengagement, literacy in all the world's processes. Plato attacked the poets, the establishment of his time, the Homeric monopoly of the education of the young. The world Plato said must end was mimesis, the mimes. Remember, Plato himself was a mime, and he rejected that. McLuhan says back in 1957, Aristotle the scribe, the writer, in his career gravitates more toward celebrating or studying intuition, you know, the non-writing. And then McLuhan says Plato the mime goes toward the opposite to mime, writing, the thing that Aristotle is leaving. East is west, east is going west, and the west is going east. The world Plato said must end was mimesis, the irrational. Involvement instead of analysis was the enemy. He wanted total detachment. The present time is engaged in reviving Homer and getting rid of Plato. Unquote. And then the journalist goes, and so on. But you're right. He's missing. Not much nationalism. Yeah. He wants Ion to be, McLuhan to be a hot. Well, what are we doing? Ion? Or, yeah, we're quoting McLuhan in the article. He wants McLuhan to be a hot political figure. That's nationalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember there is a film I saw back in the 70s. They interview him, and in passing, it's about the lefties or people trying to make a Canadian film industry. And they said, Marshall, we'd like to ask you about the Canadian film industry. He goes, what Canadian industry? There isn't any. Now, it was just starting, but that was pretty alienating for him to say there wasn't any. And I think that's all they have in that. I can't remember the next part. So they smeared McLuhan as nationalism sort of became a meme in the 70s in Canada. It's sort of like in the Trump era, the nations are retreating from the global village, global membrane, global theater. Back then, the 70s, people started to retreat from the collectivist dreams of the 60s. So they're retreating into nationalism. So the Canadian film industry goes on, and they typecast McLuhan as a internationalist and not relevant to the work we must do to develop our national film industry, which they did. They made a lot of films. I don't know what they say is an industry on the level that they were hoping, did it get the same goals, because it's film and it's kind of obsolete for people. So to finish up, all McLuhan did was elaborate and ornament his mystical theory. It's not a mystical theory, and he didn't elaborate. He defined his terms for people who hadn't heard him before. He casts out the net of his mind to catch examples floating in the present air. That's true. He says you got to, when you're writing a book, you have to grab for anything, throw it into the pile. And he draws these examples in like flapping fish to be consumed in his omnivorous worldview. Anything will do, even James Joyce. So this guy doesn't even appreciate Joyce. Then some guy says you're wrong in stating that Abbey Theater was a commercial theater. So they made him look like a provincial con man.
Mm.
But see, they may have made him look a con man, but McLuhan kept being invited to speak on and on and on. He'd say that it was fellow professors. Oh, okay, they're mad at me, jealous of me, or whatever. I don't know if he said jealous, but they're mad at me. And say I'm insignificant and wrong. Well, how come I'm being invited everywhere to talk and do stuff, and these guys aren't invited at all? So he knew he was something because people felt they had to process him and hear him. They didn't, you know, and probably were disappointed.
Isn't
but they had to
harness?
Do it anyways. What?
Isn't this an harness?
Yeah, right. They made him look like a provisional con man. The gulf between McLuhan and his audience is a folie à deux, a clash between two opposing ways of thinking. If he isn't crazy, they are. But there's more to them. And if they're sane, then he's crazy. With his tangle of pithy aphorisms leading not to an explanation but to another riddle, he squares for a loop. Is that square dancing? What would be squaring for a loop? Well, I guess just returning to his opening statement. And he's tying the same revered academic references by tying them together in an unpredictable way. One word I'm not sure of, the first tying. But he didn't say much about nationalism, but he did. So you're right, Gene. This is a fake news, fraudulent journalism.
Well, and when he opens it by saying nationalism is becoming more like communism or is becoming communism, I don't know, was communism popular?
What? Nationalism was communism 100 years before communism showed up. So what did you say about popularity?
Well, I mean, that would be offensive to...
Yeah,
the mainstream.
Everybody.
Yeah. So he didn't even hear that part, the commenter at the bottom. He didn't even hear that part of McLuhan's statement about nationalism. To criticize
that it was...
communism.
What? That part. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming that the writer who made the statement that McLuhan was not a nationalist wouldn't necessarily see nationalism as communist.
Right.
You know.
Well, the thing is that he's pressured by the number of words he can write. And he has to say something. So a lot of it's just made up, fucked up pattern recognition, subject to the rules of the editors. And chunks can be edited out. So we don't want to put too much stock in it, but it's interesting to hear it and then remember what McLuhan said. But it begins by saying, is a hippie wandering alone among the squares of academia? No, he's in committee meetings. He could think, put on right hemisphere thinking that the hippie hoped to put on. They were squares, but not everybody. So it's an inaccurate article all around.
And there was no year posted on it. Bob, you can't tell what year it is.
No.
Okay.
Nothing to indicate it other than something was indicated. What was that?
The Graduate, talking about the movie.
Oh, yeah, The Graduate, yeah.
Right.
So we go to the next part. What?
I love it, Bob. It, you know, Trump is exposing the collapse of bureaucracy and while you expose the underbelly of McLuhan.
Yes. And the good stuff of McLuhan.
Yeah, it's a good under. It's, yeah, not services and disservices, not good or bad.
Right. That isn't bad, did you say?
Well, it's just, it's an expose, you know. It's you said in the beginning of the show, this is stuff that hasn't been said or read before.
Right. Okay, so I'm looking for the next one. Let's see what that is. Hey, I got more from that committee meeting, Bob Ray. So I finally come across that one. So let's continue that. See what how they do with McLuhan. I'm going to play a little bit of music. I need to have a bite to eat and drink something, okay? Take a break here.